Hello again. My name is Jeffrey Davis. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, and welcome back. And I want to welcome everybody who continues to join our ever-growing entrepreneurial network. We know the next guest is going to join it as well, another entrepreneur, and I do consider attorneys entrepreneurs, sort of self-employed within a bigger employment concept. It's Larry Casey from the law firm of Davis, Malm, and DeAugustine, and we're going to talk today about startup employment law. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So tell us, what's going on with startup employment law that we need to know about?
So basically, what I think when a lot of people are starting up a new business, they need to be aware of particular employment issues that might impact them. A lot of people are concerned about cost, concerned about how to cut corners when you're first starting because you don't have enough money to start
money
with employees.
Here.
Exactly.
Yep.
But you got to be careful there because there are a lot of issues that you need to address even when you're a small company, two or three people. So one big issue is if you're in business with yourself or if you've got a partner or a couple of partners, what do you do about their ownership interests amongst you? And is there a way, to the extent you need to, break up at some point? What happens with those ownership interests?
Well, you know what? It's funny. Can I just jump in right on that point?
Sure.
Being a management consultant and actually have owned 10 companies and most of them partnerships in some form, all firms eventually change ownership.
Absolutely.
And the relationships always change over time.
They do.
It's not a marriage.
No. Well, the way I just usually describe it with people, because a lot of times you're talking about non-compete agreements and restrictive covenants also
right.
with regard to employees, is that when you're first going into the job, it's the honeymoon. And
right.
you are going to have a marriage, but it's going to end.
Let's
it's
go
by death
make a business. We're going to get rich, Larry.
Yep.
That's how people start companies.
Exactly.
I have an idea. Let's get rich right. together.
And everybody thinks it's all going to work great. But
right.
sometimes it doesn't.
And we're going to love each other forever.
Exactly.
It's 50-50, buddy.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it works that way. Sometimes it doesn't.
And most of the time it doesn't.
No. A lot of times they do break
and
up.
And you have to prepare for that.
You do. You do. And you got to set up ownership interest that way to try to structure it such that either you earn your ownership interest over time or you have to convey it back to the company for, you know, some money or fair market value or that type of thing. So that's an important point.
And can I just add something to that, just for the sake of discussion, just because
sure.
it's an area that I get involved with a lot as a consultant. So many times I'll read shareholders agreements and I think to myself, oh, boy, because they told the attorney this needs to be cheap. We're just starting the business. I think if it's possible, shouldn't these agreements be written so that if in the case of a transition, that the process is laid out ahead of time for negotiation for the transition?
Absolutely. What it's best to do is either have a formula or you set it up that it's fair market value or depending how you're acquiring those interests. Sometimes you acquire them vested over time. And if you don't get within to a certain period of time, it's forfeited completely. So you haven't paid anything in. You got some sweat equity in there, and that's the other, you know, sensitive issue. Depending on the type of company, if you've contributed IP or if you've contributed something else to the business, you should have some ownership interest there. But the individuals who are maintaining the business, if somebody decides to leave, needs a way to get that ownership back so they can give it to somebody else who they want to join the firm.
Right. And I guess the other thing that I see that I know you've written about is that once they start this business with this sort of yellow brick road, let's hold hands and skip down the road together, they start hiring contractors versus employees, correct?
That is correct. And a lot of people do that to try to, again, save money and cut costs. But in Massachusetts, there's a statute that where there is a presumption that you're an employee, and it's rebuttable. But there's a three-part test that you have to meet, and it's very difficult to meet. And if you misclassify an employee as an independent contractor, you could be subject to civil and criminal penalties as well as treble damages and attorney's fees.
And those triple damages are paid ahead of time. It's guilty before proven innocent, correct?
I wouldn't say it's guilty before proven innocent. Let's just say that you've got the claim under the statute to get them, but you still have to prove that you were misclassified, that you were an employee.
And that's a cost in that as well.
There is a huge cost in that.
Because you have to prove it.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to pay the attorneys to do it.
And that could close down a business itself.
It could very much close down a business depending on its finances. And it's incumbent upon the employer to prove that the employee is an independent contractor rather than an employee.
So, you know, again, we're thinking startup right now. So, again, I'm going for some of the articles I've read of yours, of your writings. Can an employee defer to help cash flow? Defer, salary?
No, you can't. So what you can do.
Too bad. I was going to hit on Alex.
Well, Alex might like that. I don't know. Might not like that. You can't defer. So what the wage statute requires is you can't, by special contract, avoid the obligation of the wage statute, which is to pay wages right after they're earned. You basically pay them within a certain period of time after you've worked. And what some startups have done is said, okay, look, we're going to defer a salary. We don't have the cash flow to cover it. Every time you do that, each one of those employees has a claim for treble damages and attorney's fees.
Ouch. Ouch.
Yeah, very, very ouch. And what's better is to...
Forget it, Alex.
Is to get the employee to reduce the salary down, even if you do minimum wage.
Right.
But pay the minimum wage.
So and, Alex can come to me and ask to be paid less?
Well, I don't think Alex would come to you. I think you'd probably go to Alex and say, hey, you can stick around and work, but you got to take... Minimum wage.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, I'm sure we are. Everybody who started a business has. But the other people, is if you're managing the business, you got to be careful because you could be personally liable. So
right.
Even though you've set up,
even though it's an LLC.
Exactly.
So how good is that corporate shell if it's not a complete corporate shell?
Well, the corporate
shell. I don't like this whole concept.
The corporate shell is very good for protecting you against third party claims and some claims within the company. But most people set up the corporation for the shell against third-party claims.
But people do try to break that corporate shell.
They absolutely do. And there's ways you can do it depending on how you manage your business and whether you run it. And stick with the corporate niceties and keep separate bank accounts, all that fun stuff. And those are all the part, you know, important things to running a business. A little bit far afield from the employment side, but still important.
That's a topic I don't like. Do salaried employees have to be paid overtime? I've always been under the assumption that they don't. They've accepted a salary, but you know, I know that's an area that you also work with people on.
Yes, it is. And that is, your perception is a misperception that a lot of people have. Think that if I pay this person a salary, I'm all set, I'm covered, and they can work as many hours. That's not the case.
So I can't work. I mean, last night I was on the phone with a client I was working with, who's working over 80 hours a week, and they've demanded that he work 80 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be in the office by 7:30, and he has to stay in the office till 7 every night. He does not get paid overtime.
So that would depend upon, does he fit one of the exemptions? And there's three general exemptions in order to be paid and not be required to pay overtime. One is an executive, where you're managing the business.
He's not.
The other would be administrative.
Right.
So you're involved in management policies and general administration of the business. And third would be he's a professional, engineer, computer scientist, lawyer, accountant.
Okay.
Where you could work like a dog, hours upon hours. And
yeah, but if you join, law firm and medical practice or residency, if you're just coming out of university and you're taking a job in a firm, a business firm, and you're just told, this firm, that's our demand.
If you meet one of those exemptions, it doesn't matter. You don't have to pay the
overtime. Is that nationwide or state? Is that
the
state?
That's federal. The categories I just gave you for those exemptions, that's federal law.
Wow.
So, yeah, and again, from an employer's perspective, you got to be careful to make sure that employee meets one of those exemptions. And it might be easy to fit someone in professional because they have a professional.
But what employee who's just, you know, what employee is really going to take on the employer that way? Not too many.
Not too many, but you'd be surprised because those are the people that I represent. People get frustrated or they eventually realize.
Well, you're going to lose your job if you take on your employer with that issue.
Well, you may.
And you're not going to get a reference.
You may, but if most people lose their job at some point in time. And if you lose your job, you may have a claim back for the lost wages, the overtime wages, treble damages, and attorney's fees again. So it could be a huge risk from the company's perspective to not properly analyze the employee as to whether or not they are exempt or not.
This person I spoke to last night was not a happy guy.
No, I'm sure working 80 hours a week would not make me happy if I had to do it too long.
Should all employees be subject to agreements prohibiting competition, solicitation of customers, things like that? So common with my clients, as part of the engagement of hiring, they are giving these non-solicitations to employees.
Mm-hmm. So interesting, in the broadcast industry, those types of agreements are void in Massachusetts. But in other businesses, it's important, depending on the startup and who you use them for. I wouldn't say you give them to every employee. You don't need the receptionist to have one. But what you do is you need the people that
are... I'll show you... Wait a second. Carla Fiorini, is it? She started as a secretary, didn't she?
Well, she may have started as a secretary.
That's not a receptionist, but still.
I understand, but at that point in time, she maybe didn't need a non-compete. As she moved up in the company, then you maybe did.
But isn't it harder to give it to... sorry to interrupt.
Isn't it
harder to give it to someone once they're an employee? Isn't it better to start right from day one, and then as they progress and every job change, give them another one?
I would say you're on point with every job change, give another one. But whether you start them with one or not, if you're starting employees and they're working up through the ranks, it's the position they're starting and what you do the analysis, whether you really need it. What are you trying to protect? And then if it's unnecessary, as they move up, anytime you give them a promotion, that's when you would want to give them one. And there's law that exists that if you have an employee that has a non-compete and they get a new position with new responsibilities, larger responsibilities, maybe a larger territory on sales, that old non-compete is not effective. You need to give them a new one if you want an effective non-compete. So you're right on with give them as they move up the ladder. But again, I don't think you need to do it for every single individual, but you're going to analyze it. The things you can protect are legitimate business interests, confidential information, trade secrets, and goodwill, customer goodwill. So if you've got employees that are involved with those categories, then you may want to seriously consider having a non-compete.
Interesting. So what benefits do employers have to give employees?
So the reason I would like to talk a little bit about that is most startups start with a small number of employees. There are a lot of laws that don't govern and impact startup businesses until you get to a certain number of employees. The one recent law that just was passed is Massachusetts sick leave law. Every employer has to provide sick leave. If you have less than 6 employees, it's unpaid. If you have more than 6, it's paid. There are a number of other statutes where you've got to get above 6 or above 20 employees to have any impact on a business. But as most startups are proceeding, you're looking to grow. And as you grow, you need to realize that as I grow, things become more complex from a legal standpoint. I've got additional laws that may apply to me, and I've got to comply with. And that's the thing you have to be careful about.
You know, you made me look relatively smart today. I appreciate it. You clearly are quite versed in this whole subject of startup employment issues. Can you tell us a little bit in our last minute or so about Davis Malm?
Sure. So Davis Malm is a full-service firm, covers a broad gamut of legal issues from corporate estate planning, litigation, and, of course, what I do, employment law.
Been around a long time, right?
I have been around.
Not you, the firm.
Well, the firm has been around much longer than I've been around, but I've been around more than 30 years, so they've been around quite some time.
You don't have the count for me.
No, I don't have the count for you.
Larry, if somebody wants to talk to you about startup employment topics, how would they find you?
The easiest would be go to a website, davismalm.com, click on attorneys, and you'll see my lovely face in picture there.
Really? I really hadn't. That didn't occur to me, the lovely face part.
Oh, well. My wife tells me it's there.
Well, it's nice. It's nice to be in love or be loved, even better.
Yeah.
Again, my name is Jeffrey Davis, and my apologies to anybody who I've said anything to offend them over time. My wife always likes me to leave parties apologizing. She always assumes I've said something wrong. We've been talking with Larry Casey from Davis Malm and D'Augustine. And really, thanks for being on the show today.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank
Great.
You
We hope you come
me.
Back again. Great
All right.
topics.
All right. Thank you.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after these messages on Radio Entrepreneurs.